Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, if you were the richest baseball team ever, yes, they play in the Bronx, and you had a stadium project with a prominent British soccer team, should you get New York City tax breaks? We'll try to answer that question today. We'll check out the latest problem with the Affordable Care Act, various problems, real and trumped up. And we have smart decisions expert Noreen Hirt. You know her from University College in London, who The Guardian calls one of the leading public intellectuals. She has this widely watched TED Talk and advises on decisions ranging from whether to attack Iran to whether to let your baby cry himself to sleep. So Noreen Hirt coming up this morning, and yes, she will take your questions for advice. But first, privacy advocates can add a new name to their list of heroes alongside Glenn Greenwald and Edward Snowden. He is Richard J. Leon, the federal judge who authored yesterday's ruling calling into question the constitutionality of the NSA's domestic phone tapping program. Leon's opinion was far from dispassionate. If you haven't heard some of this language yet, we'll read some excerpts from it. He called the surveillance almost Orwellian. He said, "I cannot imagine a more indiscriminate and arbitrary invasion than the systematic and high-tech collection and retention of personal data on virtually every single citizen for purposes of querying and analyzing it without prior judicial approval," unquote. And we'll read more coming up. Siobhan Gorman is intelligence and national security correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Siobhan, thanks for doing this. Welcome to WNYC today.
Great to be with you.
So I just read a little bit of Leon's ruling, and he's a George W. Bush appointee, I'll point out. Elsewhere, he said that he was aghast at the extent of surveillance. So my question to you is, why did he stop short of ordering the entire program to be shut down? Instead, he only stopped surveillance on the two plaintiffs in the case and gave the government as much as 6 months to appeal his decision.
Right. Well, as strongly worded and often sarcastic as this opinion was, the judge was still somewhat limited in what he was going to order because he was acknowledging that the government is still making some pretty strong national security arguments. Now, he casts a lot of doubt on the true national security value of the program, but he was wary of completely discounting it. So he offered this more limited injunction, and he said that it wouldn't be enforced until the government had the opportunity to appeal. However, I mean, this is the first time that we've seen a regular federal judge in these what's known as an Article III court weigh in on this NSA program, and his review was not positive.
An Article III court. Now, this surveillance program was authorized under the Patriot Act after the 9/11 attacks in 2001, and this is the program to collect so-called metadata on U.S. phone calls. Did the judge here express concern with the detail of data being collected or with the idea that every phone call is being monitored on some level, that's the metadata, at all?
I think he was really more focused on the scope, both the fact that it encompasses the phone call records of nearly all Americans and that it's collected on a daily basis. So his argument was that while you might collect this type of information on an individualized basis for a particular case, as was envisioned in this the case that has kind of set the Supreme Court precedent back in 1979, this, he was saying, is a completely different animal, mainly because of the scale and the scope.
More Judge Leon language. Quote, "When do present-day circumstances, the evolutions in the government surveillance capabilities, citizens' phone habits, and the relationship between the NSA and telecom companies become so thoroughly unlike those considered by the Supreme Court 34 years ago that a precedent like the Smith case does not apply," unquote. Now, Smith was the 1979 Supreme Court case on NSA surveillance, and I know a lot of people on all sides of the NSA question who agree that 34 years seems like a long time to go without updating your language around surveillance under the law. So will this at least give the government an incentive to freshen up their legal argument?
it certainly will give them an incentive to freshen up the legal argument, and it will force them really to do so, because if they choose to appeal this ruling, they're going to have to explain why it is that that precedent is still relevant today. And that is certainly one of the questions that's really been looming ever since people began to understand that Supreme Court precedent was undergirding this particular phone record program. And it's also been the justification the government has used for other types of data collection as well. So depending on how the appeal goes, it could have a reach that is far broader than just this phone record case.
More from Leon's decision. Quote, the almost Orwellian technology that enables the government to store and analyze the phone metadata of every telephone user in the United States is unlike anything that could have been conceived in 1979. That was when that law was passed. And more language. Quote, the threshold issue is whether plaintiffs have a reasonable expectation of privacy that is violated when the government indiscriminately collects their telephony metadata. Yes, he used the word telephony. Metadata, along with the metadata of hundreds of millions of other citizens without any particularized suspicion of wrongdoing, retains all of that metadata for 5 years, and then queries, analyzes, and investigates that data without prior judicial approval of the investigative targets, unquote. So first off, Siobhan, I don't know if the word telephony is more legally appropriate language, but it's funny to read. But seriously, what is the threshold that he's now establishing? Is it that you can only do telephone surveillance when you have a specific warrant that you've obtained for a particular individual who's a target?
Well, what he's suggesting is that the program would probably be a lot closer to meeting the constitutional requirements if there were some sort of individualized suspicion. And that is an issue that a number of critics of a number of NSA programs have raised when you end up with programs that seek to scoop up large quantities of information and don't necessarily sort of focus on suspicion. Now, what the NSA will say, particularly in the case of the phone records program, is that when they conduct searches of the database, they are required to meet a certain level of suspicion. They call it reasonable articulable suspicion. And that is the level or the threshold that they have to meet to conduct searches. But you don't have to meet any sort of threshold to collect the data in the first place.
We're talking with Wall Street Journal national security correspondent Siobhan Gorman about this stunning federal court decision. And I mean stunning, whether in the sense that you love it, and so it's beautiful, it's stunning, or whether you're just stunned by it. You've been hearing the language. And this ruling happened to come down the day after General Keith Alexander and other NSA leaders participated in a lengthy 60 Minutes piece, one that many saw as far too soft on the agency. So here is Alexander from 60 Minutes defending the telephone surveillance program.
There is no reason that we would listen to the phone calls of Americans. There's no intelligence value in that. There's no reason that we'd want to read their email. There is no intelligence value in that.
What they are doing is collecting the phone records of more than 300 million Americans.
Why do you need all of those phone records?
How do you know when the bad guy who's using those same communications that my daughters use is in the United States trying to do something bad? The least intrusive way of doing that is metadata.
So, Siobhan, does this all basically come down to whether you think or whether the court thinks that metadata is a violation of privacy or not?
Yes. And I mean, General Alexander is right that that is the least intrusive way to do it. It is certainly more intrusive to listen to your phone calls or read your emails. The question is whether it's a justifiable intrusion. And that's something that Judge Leon is taking issue with. One additional point that doesn't necessarily come up in Judge Leon's opinion because he's not asked to look at it, but one issue that a number of privacy experts have raised with me and frankly former NSA officials too is it's not just the privacy implications of collecting all these phone records. It's the privacy implications of aggregating those records with other records that NSA collects. And it has a number of different programs that in the course of its foreign intelligence collection will pick up lots of data, and it may be about Americans, and it may be something that NSA still deems of foreign intelligence interest, so it can keep it. And you start to marry that up with other data that NSA collects. And so the question is that each individualized piece of data may not raise a lot of privacy questions, but when you collect it all together and you start to analyze it, you know, across databases, does that also raise even greater privacy questions?
Yeah, and then it makes me think, what does this say about the FISA court, which is the Justice Department's own review of NSA programs? We hear the FISA court invoked over and over again to justify it, because this court exists to review individual requests by the NSA to conduct programs like this. The Justice Department has said that 15 different FISA court judges have ruled 35 times that this surveillance is constitutional. And yet, the first time a non-FISA judge gets this case, this happens. So what does this say about the government's ability to police itself?
Well, it raises a lot of questions, and it was striking to me because it's actually the same theme that we've seen on Capitol Hill, where the intelligence committees and the leadership in Congress, which have been regularly briefed on these programs, have not raised objections to it. But yet, when the details of the programs became more broadly known by other lawmakers, even very senior ones like the leaders of the judiciary committees, they became very upset, and they have proposed major changes. So you've seen this split between leaders that are part of the club and leaders that are not part of the club in terms of who's actually been, you know, brought in from the beginning on the details of these programs. And now you're starting to see that in the judiciary, where obviously the FISA court was part of the club and Judge Leon was not part of the club. And looking at the same sets of details, he has come to a very different conclusion.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC, with Wall Street Journal national security correspondent Siobhan Gorman. And listeners, I wanted to lay out at least this much of it. And you're hearing, again, this incredible language from this judge yesterday saying that there is probably a Fourth Amendment violation by this NSA metadata collection program on phone records and other things. Wanted to lay this out before opening up the phones. But now if you have questions or comments, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I wonder if any of you who were not Edward Snowden fans before now think that the government should consider amnesty for him if the things that he has revealed are being found unconstitutional by federal judges. Of course, this is not the last word. There will certainly be an appeal. Maybe it'll go all the way up to the Supreme Court. But 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And how much does Edward Snowden have to do with this? Is there information in this case that only came to light because of his leaks? Siobhan?
Oh, yes. One of the probably the main reason why the judge was able to rule in this case at all was that the people bringing the suit were actually able to prove that they have what's known as standing, that they have a right to bring the case, that they have a right to show that there was likely some harm done to them personally. What has happened in the past is there haven't been enough details to show that the people bringing the lawsuit actually really have a stake in the suit itself. And after Mr. Snowden leaked the document that said, you know, there was a court order that required Verizon to hand over these records, all of a sudden, all of Verizon's customers now had a case to make that they had standing to sue and raise questions about this program. And so that's what the folks at Judicial Watch, Larry Klayman and others, raised. They said, look, you know, we are customers of Verizon, and therefore we can bring this lawsuit. So having that document in the public sphere clearly gave them much more leverage to bring this lawsuit than folks in the past have. And there are other lawsuits that are now making that same argument. This one just happened to be the first to have a ruling.
And interestingly, Klayman and Judicial Watch, it's basically a conservative group, usually labeled a conservative group, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And one interesting thing about Judge Leon, he was appointed by George W. Bush, as I said before, and he has a history of ruling against the government on a wide range of issues. He ruled against the Federal Reserve charging bank fees. He ruled against the government plan to drape cigarette packages with graphic warnings, and he ruled against the Guantanamo detention. So he seems to be carving out this kind of libertarian conservative argument that would be consistent with Judicial Watch against surveillance. And I'm curious how significant you think that is and whether it represents a trend on the judiciary.
Well, I think it's consistent both within the judiciary, but also within the American public and on Capitol Hill. I mean, you've seen these surveillance issues cutting clear across party lines. I mean, that's why the leading proposal to rein in the NSA phone data program is sponsored by James Sensenbrenner, the Republican chairman of the House Judiciary, not chairman, but leader of the House Judiciary Committee, and Patrick Leahy, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, who's an ardent Democrat from Vermont. And, you know, Sensenbrenner was one of the authors of the Patriot Act. So you have people who are suspicious of too much government power coming together. And that is, you know, we're seeing increasingly not an issue that is a partisan one.
Olivia in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Olivia, thanks so much for calling up.
Hi. I'm just wondering about this whole issue of privacy and people's concerns when clearly when you go on your computer, whoever's on there, whatever store you've ever shopped at or anything you've looked at is already known by who knows. I don't think there is privacy anymore, and I don't know why this is worse than what the stores are doing.
It's a great question, but here's one of the answers is that before you submit that data, before you get going with those websites, in most cases, even if you don't stop to read the lengthy document, you click a little thing that says, I agree to terms of service.
Yeah, nobody reads those.
I know nobody reads those, and that's an issue too. But how else would you answer that question, Siobhan, in terms of the difference between this NSA program that's being ruled, at least for the moment, a violation of the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, and the, you know, probably more day-to-day creepy because it pops up on our computer screens more often, things that all these companies know about us because we bought something or even just browsed at something.
Right. Well, it's a personal trade-off that every consumer makes. I think that the main difference that people end up seeing between the private sector collecting this type of information and the government collecting this type of information is what they're able to do with it. I mean, Google can keep pushing different ads at you, but the government can put you on a terror watch list or arrest you or call you in for some sort of investigation. And so that greater power that the government has to compel you to do something, I think, is the issue that people raise with why the government's level of surveillance is different.
And what about any actual harm? There are two actual plaintiffs in this case, and as you were saying before, they have standing because Snowden revealed that there was a particular arrangement between the government and Verizon. And so Verizon customers who had, you know, the metadata, meaning who they called and when they called them and how long the phone call lasted, just those basic things tracked, gave them standing as Verizon customers. But is anybody claiming that they were harmed, that they were illegally prosecuted, that they were, that their business or ability to get a job was affected? I mean, is anybody claiming actual harm as opposed to potential harm?
Yes and no. There are cases where people have said this type of government activity has had a chilling effect on their ability to do their job. There are, reporters and civil liberties advocates that have made that argument. Those arguments have not been as successful. I do think that where you will see an even stronger test of this type of question is in cases going forward now where the government has actually notified the the defendant in a particular criminal case, a terrorism case, that part of the evidence being used against him was obtained through NSA surveillance. And they've only started doing that. But those cases are also going to provide real tests of these types of programs, because that shows that, you know, that information that was derived from surveillance is now being used to charge someone, criminally in a court. What we're seeing with the Judicial Watch case is something that's in between, saying that the collection of this data has violated their privacy, and that in and of itself is a harm.
Sheila in Babylon to defend metadata collection. Sheila, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me. I have a comment and two questions. The comment is, you made a remark about, you know, the fact that it's not just foreign data, but Americans as well. My comment is that, you know, there have been lots of American citizens that have proven themselves not worthy of, privacy. I mean, we've got Columbine, Virginia Tech, Sandy Hook, Oklahoma. There's so many issues here in the states that perhaps necessitate something like this.
But if the government were to say, Sheila, hypothetically, that they were going to now collect metadata, you know, basic phone call tracking and stuff on every teenager in America, because a few of them are going to turn out to be the Newtown shooter or whatever, would you be okay with that? Because that probably would be the parallel.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, this isn't the Gestapo. You know, and one of my questions was, is the debate that we're having not enough to prove that? I mean, I understand that the outcome is perhaps a sacrifice of privacy, but when you look at the balance, like the horror that these Americans are actually inflicting, and here is my second question, how is the security community actually supposed to do their jobs if we are taking tools away from them? I would like to know, like, how am I going to be secure?
And we have a new piece of metadata now for the NSA. Phone call from Babylon, Long Island to Lower Manhattan, approximately 2.5 minutes. But seriously, Siobhan, to her question, how are they supposed to know? Because that is the trade-off in all seriousness. If people are too uncomfortable, or if the judges up to the Supreme Court decide that this does violate the U.S. Constitution, how else are they supposed to find things to prevent things before they happen with as much success?
Well, one of the more interesting components of Judge Leon's opinion was actually his assessment of the effectiveness of the program, because, you know, part of what you weigh when you're looking at privacy implications is, well, what are the benefits? You know, you look at the privacy costs, you weigh them against the effectiveness benefits. And he talks about how the Justice Department, he says, even concedes that bulk metadata analysis is only sometimes provides information earlier than the FBI's other investigative methods. So what he is raising a lot of questions about is whether or not this program makes a unique contribution to counterterrorism, or whether it's just sort of a parallel program that essentially does a lot of what the FBI is already doing anyhow. And so that's a really important question, because if the information can be obtained in some other way, sort of standard lead-driven law enforcement, then what's the unique value that this poses weighed against the potential for privacy violations?
Elliot in Manhattanville, you're on WNYC. Hi, Elliot.
Hi there. I dialed my phone as soon as you said something about people who had not been fans of Edward Snowden before.
Yes.
And I was not. And now that, you know, there's been this judicial decision, there have also been articles that I've read in the Times, at least two different ones, indicating that the NSA is completely incapable of determining how much stuff this guy got and what it consists of. I am very intrigued by this idea of offering him some deal that would bring him back and allow him to be debriefed in a, you know, a non-custodial way, and let them know what he found, and possibly let the media know what he found.
Right. Well, he's certainly letting the media know. But in the context of amnesty.
Yes. So something that some sort of deal that would be acceptable to him. Yeah,
Elliot,
I mean,
thank you very much. And I wonder how many more Elliots there are out there, Siobhan, who drop by drop by drop, who didn't start out as Edward Snowden fans, and there were reasons not to for the way he operated in certain respects and whatever else you want to list, who are now saying, well, maybe he really is a whistleblower. And he has argued all along that he's disclosing the information that he stole because he believes the NSA surveillance techniques are not just creepy, not just too secretive, but unconstitutional. And he said that very clearly, unconstitutional. So if Judge Leon's decision is upheld, is that in a way a final vindication of Edward Snowden?
Well, I mean, it would certainly align with his argument, and it certainly helps make the case that while the government wasn't doing anything that anyone had found to be illegal, it also wasn't being scrutinized in the way that other types of government and public activity are scrutinized. And one thing we have seen is that when these types of activities are given public scrutiny, there are a lot more questions and concerns that come to light. Again, we saw this on Capitol Hill, too, that all of the Intelligence Committee leaders who had overseen the phone data program didn't have a problem with it. But then when the folks on the Judiciary Committee saw it, they did have a problem with it. And it suggests a real disconnect between the Intelligence Committees and the public, or the Intelligence Committees and their colleagues outside of the Intelligence Committee. And so it does raise questions about the people who we have kind of deputized to oversee this, because not everybody can know all of NSA's secrets, whether or not they're really in concert with both the public opinion and the law and the Constitution.
Yeah, well put. And another bit of fallout from the 60 Minutes piece along those lines, the man in charge of the Snowden task force said he is now open to the idea of amnesty for Snowden. The White House, however, very quickly squashed that idea Sunday night or Monday. So the fate of Edward Snowden certainly remains unresolved. We will mention one other notable thing about Snowden before we wrap this up. In a profile on Forbes yesterday, some former coworkers of his say he used to come to work at the NSA facility wearing a sweatshirt of the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is this online privacy rights group based in San Francisco. And his friends thought, according to Forbes, that he was wearing the sweatshirt ironically. But kind of amazing, Siobhan, that it didn't raise any red flags. I mean, it's like a Jon Stewart producer showing up to work in a Fox News hat, you know?
Well, it is, but at the same time, I mean, NSA employees have the same freedom of speech as anybody else, and certainly part of that would be wearing a T-shirt saying kind of whatever they choose to have it say. It's a little bit. I have met many people who work at the National Security Agency who are ardent civil libertarians, and NSA actually recruits a fair number of people who sort of have that frame of mind. In fact, sort of the tech world has an undercurrent of libertarianism as well. So I don't know that that would inherently raise suspicion, but it might mean that when you look at it in retrospect, you're not so surprised.
Siobhan Gorman is intelligence and national security correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Thank you for sharing your intelligence with us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll check out the latest problems with the Affordable Care Act, problems real and trumped up. Stay with us.